and welcome to Kayak Fishing the Wild West on kayakfishingradio.com, the day after Thanksgiving. The angler's number one resource for what's happening in the sport of kayak fishing. I'm your host, Dennis Spike from kayakfishing.com, joined by the very funny and very fishy fishmonger, my co-host, Isaac the Nothing Miller, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon. Happy Thanksgiving, Isaac.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. How's it been going for you?
It's been going great, but I got to apologize right off the bat for not appearing on last week's show. Michelle and I headed out Friday morning from Bodega Bay with great plans to do the show and slide into the synagogue for my nephew's bar mitzvah, and we made the synagogue. It's been quite a weekend. It's been a week full of many Spikes gathering, a great Thanksgiving, coming down to Southern California, seeing lots of old friends. And then I got a little bit of news to report. We've got fish reports on crab. We've been doing Dungeness crab feeds on friends, family, and passing out to strangers all over the southern part of the state. We should have some expert guests coming onto the switchboard. Hopefully we'll have some stuffed Thanksgiving anglers coming into the chat room. And I want to remind listeners that although the show is on the West Coast, we welcome all of your questions and comments about kayak fishing, and we want to hear from you from coast to coast. Log on to the chat room at kayakfishing.com or call into the switchboard and we'll put you live on the air. The guest call-in number is area code 714-816-4727. And I think the most exciting news I've got that we'll get to a little bit later is, once again, there was a shark attack on a kayak on the California coast. And I am your cynical kind of kayak fisherman. I usually do not call encounters with sharks of any kind on the kayaks attacks. This indeed is a documented attack, and I look forward to sharing it with you. Luckily, no one was hurt except the kayak itself.
And plastic's pretty strong, isn't it?
That plastic is pretty darn strong. And I want to get to that. Isaac, have you got any reports going on in the Great Northwest?
Yeah, you know, this week it was a wild, windy, wet, nasty, stormy week. We had over 3 inches of rain in the Portland area alone. Coastal cities, 6 to 10 inches of rain. So, not a whole lot of fishing going on. The water's really, really high, really, really nasty at the moment. But there are sturgeon out there. I know several guys went out sturgeon fishing this morning. Best place to be because everyone was shopping. Yeah. Sturgeon fishing still doing pretty well. Like I said, that high water makes it really tough. But they're still there. They're still feeding. It just doesn't sound like they're going to open up sturgeon for retention anytime soon. So it's going to continue to be a catch and release fishery for, you know, 2, if not 3, 4 months.
Season.
So
at least
a lot
the
of,
end of this season, huh?
Well, it's still, I mean, it's closed right now.
Right.
But it's open to catch and release. But, I don't see it, you know, it's going to be another 2 to 3 months before it opens up for retention. Normally it would be January 1, but it sounds like it's going to be mid-February now. And a lot of rumors out there in the rumor mill. Hard to say exactly what's going to happen, but things are definitely looking different this year.
You know, it's interesting. I think the sturgeon are one of the lucky examples fisheries that we still have and that we can still appreciate recreationally. If this was Russia, the Baltics, any of those regions where all the caviar came from, we wouldn't be looking at sturgeon fishing anymore. We'd have it shut down everywhere. You know, you jogged my memory. We're moving pretty fast down here with all these family functions and visiting on kayak shops, trying to get a little business done while I'm here. And I was watching the national news the other day. I'm not sure what part of Washington it was. I know it wasn't coastal, but it was up one of the rivers. And they're showing salmon swimming across the road because
yep.
the river could flood it over the road.
Yeah, that happens almost every year.
Really? Almost every year. It makes a great shot on the news, I got to tell you.
That it does.
Further south, the fishing, there's been a little fishing going on for the rockfish, lingcod, cabezon, and the rockfish series, but most of the emphasis has really been on the Dungeness crab fishing. And while it isn't the epic year that we had last year, I think it's a pretty darn good year and just shy of epic. Everybody who's going out is getting their 10 big Dungeness crabs a day. And I'm learning a lot as the season goes on. You being a fishmonger know all about this. But mm-hmm. every once in a while I've heard people complain about crabs being soft-shelled and crabs not having any meat inside of them.
Right.
What happens here on the California coast when the Department of Fish and Game and the feds agree on a crab season, It is typical for the commercial fishermen to go on strike for a few days to a few weeks to establish a market price. And while they were battling back and forth towards the opening of the commercial season, they determined that the volume of meat inside of the crabs that were being caught wasn't quite enough. And I believe they're looking for ratios somewhere around 20% meat volume to the weight of the crab itself. So they're going to give it a couple more weeks, maybe up to six, until these crabs fill out a little bit and the commercial fishermen get out there. But the bottom line is they could fish now. They're just trying to deliver the highest quality product to the market. So they're going to wait for those crabs to fatten up. For us recreational anglers, we've been doing pretty darn good, I got to tell you. And we've
yeah.
had some pretty blessed days. There's a few areas that offer a lot of protection from that 7 to 10-foot swell that's been moving up and down the Northern California coast. And we've been fishing a lot at Doran Beach. You know, I encourage listeners, if you want to get more information on the Central and Northern California Dungeness crab fishery, to look at the website norcalkayakanglers.com. That's NCKA.org. Either one of those addresses will get you to the website. And being the father or founder, I'm laughing there when I say that because Chuck Levi, when I posted on the Angler group on Facebook, he came back and called me the godfather of kayak fishing. And I got to tell you, that is so flattering. But where I was going with all of that was, who knows where I was going with that. He's killing me. I shouldn't be reading and doing the show at the same time. The crab season is looking good, and everybody who's going out is getting their 10 crabs. By the way, even with the low meat count, we're not really seeing that, that under 20% that the commercial guys are talking about, because these are nice, meaty crabs we're getting. But early in the season, let's see, Saturday was the third week of crab season, and the crabs are weighing, a 10-pound limit is weighing anywhere from 20 to 26 pounds. And that's probably not too bad from a fishmonger point of view, huh?
20 to 26 pounds?
A limit of 10 crab, right.
10 crab, that's some good crabbing.
That's some good eating. We're getting fat on it, I tell you. No, that's not bad at all. And it really is a wonderful fishery at Doran Beach. That's what I was getting back to is, you know, Levi called me the godfather of kayak fishing, and I'm real flattered by all of that. But my experience... And not but. I mean the great thing about it is just I've been around for a very long time. Kayakfishing.com was the first website with the first forum. And that NCKA.org, the NorCal Kayak Fisherman, the Northwest Kayak Fisherman, these are two of the best forums coast to coast. The level of information, education, and sharing is phenomenal. Starting to see that flash chat board light up. Welcome aboard, y'all. And I really encourage anglers and listeners to the show to look at these forums, because it doesn't matter if you're in Miami, Minnesota, or Maine, you're going to pick up some good kayak fishing information out of there.
That you are. So, yeah, you know, I'm kind of glad to hear California follow suit with Oregon and Washington on the commercial crabbing. And they closed things off here. They announced that a couple of weeks ago, that it's the same thing. You know, the crab's not what they want it to be, and at this point, the earliest it might open up commercially is December 15th, which is a two-week delay.
Right.
So, saying it might go even longer than that. We'll find out when the time comes, but
I don't think that's going to hurt anybody except people looking to get crab in the supermarket. That and all the other factors combined are going to keep those prices a little higher. Again, I don't like seeing those guys go out and making less than what they should be making. You know, I don't care if it's Alaska, Oregon, or California. These guys do have the most dangerous job in the world. And they earn their money out there. They should be getting a good price for their catch.
Right. So they're just really concerned about quality of the crab. And, you know, again, we weren't seeing it either. When I was doing my bay crabbing last month, we were seeing some great quality crab, just like you guys are seeing down there in California. So still kind of confused what's going on out in the salt water. Out in the deep ocean water, when things in the bay seem to be just fine. I'm not too sure the exact story on that, but
I was talking to some of the guys that fish commercially out of Bodega Bay, and they've been looking at some of the pots that are soaking out there, and I guess they're working with Fish and Game too, taking a look at all this. And I think when they're getting into the deeper water, that, you know, when they're pulling up 1,000 crabs, the volume in the shell is not as high as they know it could be. But I think they're seeing a lot of soft shells too, which represents a recent molt in the deeper water. And that's the natural cycle again. And for whatever reason, I can't explain it either. We're just not seeing that on the near shore. I don't know if they're older, more mature, or if it's less of a volume spawn. But I think what's going on in deeper water, because I know a lot of those guys are setting their pots at 150, 200 feet deep. I think that's really what represents for the commercial fleet what they need to see. And it could be a little different than the near shore.
Yeah, it's got to be.
We got Hammerhead 74 there in the chat room.
Yep.
Hammerhead, you can do it. You got a fish report for us? What have you heard about the other fisheries before I start talking about sharks?
Everything else has been so far so good, actually. You know, there's not a whole lot left this time of year, so.
Yeah, that's true.
There's not a commercial salmon. Yeah.
I had the opportunity to guide a fella who just moved into his new home on the beach in Malibu. When was that? Last Monday. And, you know, some days you get out there, I don't know if you experience this. Well, I know you experience it up north. I don't know about the guys down in the southeast and Gulf fishery. But here on the California coast, when the water is packed with bait, sometimes it gets difficult to catch fish. And that's what I ran into in Malibu just the other day. Took a guy out. We had a few things against us, like a low tide at the peak of our fishing session. But the water was absolutely packed with bait, and we had a lot of trouble drumming up a bite. So I stuck my bait real close to the bottom, not seeing as much bait down there as in the rest of the water column. And this bait fish was mostly smelt. Jack smelt and sardines, of course. Now, that jack smelt here on the California coast, I have always preached that a 4-inch smelt is the kayak fisherman's secret weapon, because I've seen it catch everything from bass and halibut to yellowtail. But we didn't get into the bass. We couldn't find the barracuda. We couldn't find the halibut. And this guy had a terrific day. And it's funny, since he lives right on the beach, you know, so many of us in the kayaks launch through the surf or into the water and forget about that first 10 or 20 yards of shoreline, which tends to hold a lot of fish, especially on the Pacific and the Atlantic.
Oh, and, great surf perch. Mm.
So I went through, when I was doing the onshore instruction, I gave this fellow a little lesson on what I thought about surf fishing in front of his little house right there. And he sent me an email back today, told me he learned so much during the fishing session, even though I caught the only fish. And the next day, he brought his 5-year-old and his 8-year-old out to the beach, and they went for a paddle and used the sabikis, the bait catchers. We call them Lucky Joes on the Pacific. And they caught tons of bait fish, sardines, and smelts. And then when he came into the beach, he said he was cleaning off the gear, and he looked at that first 20 or 30 feet of shoreline off from the beach and thought about what I said, and he noticed it looked like the water was boiling, something he had never noticed before. So he grabbed the two little kids and his bait-making stick, and they caught in 30 minutes 20 surf perch and one corbina. And,
wonderful.
And he said it wouldn't have happened if he hadn't listened to all my babbling for about 7 hours on the beach. Made me feel real good. They had a good time. And now that I think about it, that was his day before Thanksgiving. But, you know, the guiding gets me on the water, and if it wasn't for that, I'd probably still be practicing acupuncture, because I absolutely love bringing people into the sport, and every time is different. You know, you guide, don't you, Isaac?
I do not, no.
This guy, I've heard people tell me they've learned a lot from you. You must just guide your friends.
I just talk a lot.
The satisfaction is unbelievable, and I really enjoy it. Are you following that chat room, Isaac? I'm having trouble stretching my eyes.
I am. Not a whole lot of fishing going on late in the chat room.
So, can I tell you all a little story?
I will.
When I was just getting started in kayak fishing, and this was not as a business, this was going over to Malibu from the valley on my days off or my time off with my old Scupper Classic, and my cousin had his Dimension Solo, and Howie and I would hit the beach and catch halibut and bass and white sea bass, barracuda, bonita, rockfish. It just went on and on and on. And we had real good, successful fishing from day one. But as time went on, and of course we are products of the Peter Benchley generation, the movie Jaws, which I just watched 2 nights ago at my brother's on high definition. And unbelievable, you guys, for a movie that was made that long ago. Really unbelievable. And there used to be the day early in my kayak fishing career when I could watch Shark Week before I went fishing, the night before I went fishing. And I could watch it all the way up to the tiger sharks, but then I had to turn the TV off because I just didn't want to go to sleep with that thought in my head and then hit the Pacific in the morning. And as time went on, I realized the reality that sharks really are not an issue for us. The majority of shark attacks happen in only a few feet of water, and they're usually bull sharks here in North America. And it's usually swimmers. There's very few fatalities. We have more of an issue in Hawaii. We have a few hot spots like where I live in Northern California. But other than that, when we look at the thousands of people, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, who swim and dive and recreate and paddle and sail and do everything that we do on the ocean, the shark thing isn't really a factor. However, as the sport of kayak fishing grows, it's putting a lot more people in the water. It's putting a lot more offal in the water. And I got to believe that the more people, whether it's swimmers, paddlers, fishermen, who use the water, the more interactions we're going to have with sharks. And I say interactions because that's what the majority, the overwhelming majority. However, there's a couple of hot spots on the California coast, one called Bean Hollow, the other called Pigeon Point. And these are south of me. These are actually south of San Francisco, a little bit south of me. And they have just become hot spots for kayak anglers. And last Tuesday morning, a guy named Ted hooked up with a guy named Harry, and they went out at Pigeon Point to fish the local rocks. Now, this is just a stone's throw from the beach. And in 20 feet of water, Harry was, I guess it's safe to say, slammed from underneath because it did knock him off the boat and into the air and turned the boat upside down. So while I've read his account, you can find that at the NorCal kayak fishing site. While I don't know the velocity of the speed, but this thing put a, this was a white shark, and nobody was hurt. Harry was not hurt. He is still shaken up, what is it, 3 days after the fact. And I don't blame him. I've talked to guys who've had a lot worse situations with white sharks than what happened to these guys. But it has got to be an awesome thing. His fishing partner was not too many yards away and was able to see the bottom, the back half of the shark re-entering the water. So I guess it did hit him with enough velocity, kind of like you see that new footage of sharks coming out of the water after seals and sea lions.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it hit this kayak. If I'm not mistaken, the color of the kayak was gray. It was a pedal boat. And it put a bite in the bottom of this boat. Kind of if you look at the hull of the boat, it covered two-thirds of the bottom of the hull. The top of the bite measured about 17 inches across, as did the bottom bite, and between the top and bottom bite was about 23 inches. And there's a great video at ncka.org on the thread. I believe you'll find this under in the forum. You know, the forums there are so busy and with so many topics. I think you're going to find the shark attack on the safety forum. And these guys have both been very, very generous in sharing the experience, and a lot is to be learned. You know, it's one of those things. I remember in the old days I used to spend a lot of time fishing on my own, by myself, I mean. And I think I just got lucky, whether it's white sharks, fog, drunken sailors, or any bad condition of weather. But there's a lot to be said about this, and I'm just really happy that these two guys came out of it okay. This is, I believe, the third documented shark attack on a kayak in that area on the California coast this year. You haven't had any up by you this season, have you?
No, there's been a couple of possible sightings, but nothing conclusive this year.
I tend to believe possible sightings are one of two things, white sharks or molas. And are you familiar with the mola mola, the giant sunfish?
We are. Yeah, that's pretty rare for them to get up this far north.
To make it up that far. We did see a little tiny one. We have seen them off the Sonoma coast, and we did see a little tiny one just the other day off of Malibu, one of the few fish that we saw. But molas have fooled me. In fact, molas have fooled me so many times into thinking that they were white sharks. That one time when I was down fishing the blowhole south of Ensenada in northern Baja California, Mexico, I talked myself into believing that a real white shark was a mola and stopped and fished for another 10 minutes. My guide straightened me out on that one. But, it's, you think you have a sighting, that's usually it. And sightings are common. You know, I don't want to make a plug out of this, but I think within the next 4, 5, 6 years, that shark electronic shark shield technology out of South Africa is really, at some point, the people are going to start paying attention to it. Right now, I mean, people just don't want to have anything to do with it. But I look at this as just, you know, more technology for fishing. But the bottom line is always that there is safety in numbers, don't fish alone. And we had a rule in Malibu for all those years that, you know, the great white sea bass bite of, I think it was 2000, when I caught that 75-pound white sea bass, about 2 weeks into the bite, we're sitting out there waiting to get bit. It was a guarantee every morning to catch a white sea bass. We're sitting out there, and it turned out to be ridiculous theory, but the shark showed up anyway. I said to my cousin and my partners, I said, doesn't it make sense that a lot of these giant white sea bass are just going to spawn out, and instead of moving on with the school, they're either going to die or get picked off by juvenile white sharks that are not yet into the stage of eating mammals? And everybody agreed, and it wasn't 4 days before the white sharks showed up. And we started pretty much seeing them every day for about a week. Nobody was tagged. Nobody was bumped. Everybody pretty much had the same experience, either seeing that big fin cruising the surface or looking down and seeing a really big white shark staring them in the face. And those sharks sunk out. And it is truly unnerving. My whole theory was that these big white sea bass are old and tired, but my understanding is that fish don't die of old age, Isaac. Is that true?
I've heard something similar. I don't know if I could believe that or not. Of course, I'm not a biologist, so I don't know.
Nor am I, but I think we're going to end up getting a professional opinion down the road here sooner than later. I've heard from biologists, while everything is arguable, that fish in the ocean grow until they are caught or killed by something else, and which gives me hope that there's always an opportunity to catch a new world record.
That's true.
So, what else you got for us, Isaac?
I'm just gearing up for winter steelhead. Winter steelhead are already hitting the rivers here, which is amazingly early. So hopefully we've got a real good season ahead of us. They've already checked in winter steelhead in pretty much every coastal river. And I heard today also the Sandy and Clackamas rivers here in the Portland metro area have also registered winter steelhead already. So that's just awesome news. It's probably, aside from sturgeon, the number one fishing in the cold winter months is winter steelheads. I've been tying up some flies and getting some practice in with the fly rod and looking forward to do some steelhead on the fly from the kayak.
I saw you posted a link for new flies up there somewhere today.
Yeah, so getting ready.
We've got real positive reports. The biologists are in all the rivers in California now, from the Sacramento River all the way up to the Klamath, and every one of those rivers is reporting good counts of steelhead and salmon coming into the river. And I think, we don't have too many false alarms when it comes to the steelhead. When you see these early reports, I think it's just a little variance in the natural cycle. And I agree with that. I think you're going to see a real, real good year.
Yep. So, just getting ready, tying some flies.
It's pretty exciting stuff, I tell you. I'm trying to see what else is going on around here. We had a big yellowfin tuna caught in the northeast by some commercial fishermen. Not yellowfin, bluefin tuna.
Bluefin tuna.
Did you see that, over 800 pounds?
I did. You know,
You know, he ran into
That's
a little bit of trouble with the federales there because apparently his method of take was illegal.
Yeah,
and
he had I mean, to catch bluefin tuna requires a lot of specific permits, and rightfully so. And, you know, he's a commercial fisherman. They hooked into, they had a, was it a net? Were they? They were net fishing.
They were. I think it was a seiner that they caught it in. Either a seiner or a gill net.
Yeah. And here was this, you know, giant tuna.
It was a method of take.
Well, he had permits, you know, and he thought he had the right stuff. And said, go ahead and bring it on board, guys, and head it back to port because, well, a tuna that size is worth $300,000. And it was back at port that the fish was confiscated because the permits that he has allows only for hook and line keeping. So if they had caught it on hook and line, it would have been a legitimate, they could have kept, little did he know his permit did not cover the net catch. So, innocent mistake, probably, unfortunate one, most certainly was. You know, they were definitely looking for something big.
That could have been a much bigger payday than the $5,000 they're probably going to forfeit. Now, I had a question. In this situation, and I'm usually the guy who is telling anglers, no, 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 it's better that they make us throw these out-of-season fish away or these non-take fish because it sets an example. They can't, you know, if they make an exception, exceptions mean that people loophole the law and fish for fish they're not allowed to fish for. But what exactly were they supposed to do when this 860-pound bluefin tuna showed up in their net? Are they supposed to throw it overboard and return it dead to the sea?
That's my question. I mean, that's just as bad, if not worse, you know. You know, I think they did the right thing. I mean, they made the call right away when they were, you know, on the water. They said, hey, we got this bluefin, we're coming in. You know, it's better to bring it than to dump it.
I agree.
Perhaps. You know, otherwise it's wasteful.
Even if it goes to a soup kitchen.
Cool.
You know, nothing wrong with that. It shouldn't go back into the ocean, and especially an incredible animal like that. We're not talking about the exceptional striped bass or yellowfin tuna or cod that crawls into your net when you're fishing for something else.
Yeah.
And anyway, these arguments we can go on with forever. I'm trying to see what's going on here. There's been good fishing on the inshore. People are hitting the lakes, hitting the rivers. I guess some of these deep rivers have subsided. Texas is always fishy, and I hope to get some anglers joining us on the show to give a little bit of a Gulf report here. And I just wanted to let you know, molars are bad luck. Well, I guess I know that now. That's pretty funny. I'm seeing that on the chat room. Where was I going with all of this? Oh, radio silence. I'm doing
we
it.
Were going, we were going. Yeah, we were talking about looking for some reports. You were talking about Texas.
Yeah, you know, there's such a great year-round fishery in the skinny water all around the country. And even here in California, a lot of people, Southern California, where a lot of this sport got generated in the years that have passed up in Central and Northern California, people are taking serious advantage of that Sacramento River Delta system and the San Francisco Bay Area. And everything from striped bass to smallmouth and largemouth, salmon, sharks. Unbelievable year-round fishery.
I was going to say, isn't It's striped bass season down there right now, isn't it?
It is. And in places you would never imagine, man. I'm talking to guys, girls, families who are out there fishing. And they're fishing what used to be considered suburban and industrial areas that you'd look at the water and see a canal. But these are people with kayaks who are looking at the water and seeing fish, and they're getting on them. And I'm talking to people who, when we can't get into the ocean on the coastal fisheries, are fishing the rivers and fishing the delta systems, the estuaries, where fishing is permitted. And they're doing really, really well. But, yeah, not only do we get into this striper season this time of year, but we're into the sturgeon, too. And I think if the San Francisco Bay Area is any example, I think all along the U.S. Pacific coast, we're seeing a resurgence in the sturgeon fishery. Hopefully we'll never see commercial fishing of wild sturgeon. I think they're important to the ecosystem and important to the recovery. You know, it's an amazing thing, the San Francisco Bay. The Spanish and all the explorers passed by the mouth of San Francisco literally for 200 years because they were afraid to come close to the shore. And when the first, I'm not sure if it was Cortez or who it was, but when the first explorers did come in, walked up that hill and saw that beautiful San Francisco Bay sitting on the other side, they were absolutely blown away. And it's an incredible estuary. One of the last great estuaries left on the planet and inland waterways. And I'm really excited. And, you know, you wouldn't expect, given the pollution, the overfishing, the change to the geography, because they filled in a lot of that bay to make room for factory and agriculture. Then a lot of what they didn't fill in, they drained off. But boy, those sturgeon, you talk about a hardy dinosaur. As far as fish go, they may be some of the hardiest. And I really think that given another 10 or 15 years, we're going to have, while we still maintain strict, sustainable regulations, we're going to have very, very healthy sturgeon fisheries in all the rivers and inlets that they used to be strong in. And I'm real excited about that. Sturgeon, salmon, swimming together, it's a beautiful thing.
That it is.
You know, I know you're itching to get into the kitchen. Are you doing leftovers tonight, or are you going for something completely different?
You know, I had to work this morning, and a lot of my shoppers coming through, they were looking for anything but turkey. And I'm pretty much in the same boat today, and I'm thinking barbecue. We'll find out.
Well, what's happening here is we have left the Spike compound in Simi Valley, headed over to the Giordano compound, where I'm operating out of the Giordano KayakFishingRadio.com studio. And a few of the cousins just came back from Alaska and have brought a cooler full of salmon and halibut to complement my cooler full of Dungeness crab. And the last crab I will be eating on this trip. So I think we're staying away from the turkey as well. Isaac, I think I'm going to bring the show to a close. Are you okay with that?
I'm cool with that. You bet.
All right, and I wanted to thank Hammerhead and our guests there for logging on to the chat room. Hammerhead, you're cracking me up. I want you all to have a great Thanksgiving holiday. Enjoy with your friends and with your family. You get a chance and a good window of opportunity. Get out there on the water. I want to thank you once again for listening. And Isaac the Nothing Miller and I will be back next week on Kayak Fishing the Wild West at kayakfishingradio.com. Happy Thanksgiving, and thanks so much for joining us.